Next, we're going to give you an update on the country of origin labeling. John Weber, who is our vice president, will do that, and accompanied by Audrey Adamson, who's our vice president of domestic public policy in our Washington, D.C. office. John?
Thank you, Dave. Good morning. My name is John Weber. I'm a producer from Dysart, Iowa. We're located about 20 miles south of Waterloo. Lifelong pork producer, and we're currently in on the finishing side of the business. We have finishers on three of our farms and have always stayed active in the pork associations. The issue we're going to talk about this morning is MCOOL. Again, I've kind of got a long history of involvement. I've been involved with trade issues in the past, and certainly MCOOL is what we consider a very important trade issue. A little background information from the original time of the original ruling in 2012 was challenged by our neighbors to the north, the Canadians and the Mexicans. A lot of things have happened in the big picture there. We were against the original ruling, knowing that it would cause trade issues, both live animals and product issues, and certainly that's what's occurred. That was ruled by the WTO to be out of compliance with our trade organizations in 2012. And then we were asked from the WTO to come up with a solution to that. USDA went to work on the solution to the WTA ruling, or WTO ruling, and actually, we feel, came up with actually a more restrictive trade ruling than in 2012. That also then was challenged by the Canadians and the Mexicans, and so it's always been our goal and philosophy to try to come up with a workable fix. For us, mandatory of country of origin labeling, is a consumer right. We understand the consumer's needs to wanting to know where their product comes from. But when you deal with live animals and product, with the amount of trade that we have on the North American continent, with live animals coming into the United States, being fed in the United States, processed in the United States, and then in many cases even sold in the United States and both Canada and Mexico, it becomes a very complex issue. So we've been seeking through various means to try to find a fix to MCOOL. I can give you from our standpoint, we need to come up with a fix. We're very concerned if the current rule later this summer is ruled out of compliance, at that point in time, the Canadians and Mexicans both have the right to retaliate with tariff imposition on products, not only agricultural products, but manufactured products, and it could have serious economic consequences to trade between Canada and Mexico for the United States. So there's a much bigger picture at play here. The Canadians are prepared to implement these tariffs. If we don't come up with a fix, I know the Mexicans certainly are. I think pork will be certainly high on that list. Beef will be on that list, and along with a lot of other agricultural products and even some manufactured goods. So we feel it's imperative that we continue to work to try to come up with a solution to the MCOOL situation. I often, talking with Audrey a little while ago, that I try to come up with a solution. Solutions to this problem are not easy. But I often compare it to the auto industry. When you buy a General Motors product, I can just about guarantee you there's parts in that car from at least a dozen different countries. And yet, it's a product of the United States. So you have to kind of keep that in the back of your mind when you think about going to the grocery store to buy meat. This animal may have been born in Canada. We have a lot of producers right here in the state of Iowa that love to feed Canadian pigs. They built their businesses around feeding Canadian pigs. And yet, when the rule came in place, they ran into the problems with marketing those pigs. Packers had to either set time aside to meet the label requirements, or they quit processing the pigs altogether. So then they, in turn, had to look for different sources of pigs. So you can kind of understand some of the trade issues, how important it is both on in our business, on the live animal side, as well as, you know, looking at it from the consumer's perspective. So it really put an undue burden, we feel it put an undue burden on the packing industry. And currently, the current rule, which requires both the country of birth, the country where it was fed, and the country where it was processed to be on the label, is even more restrictive. And again, this is on the fresh pork products that you would find in the meat case. Processed pork products are exempt from the ruling. So in our business, that would be approximately 40%, of the carcass that's affected by the rule of M-Cool. And certainly, I think it's in our best interest, with all of the trading that we do around the globe, that we live up to the standards of being good partners in trade, and we feel we really need a fix to M-Cool. So again, timelines, we're waiting that later this summer we will get a ruling from the WTO whether we are in compliance or not. If the U.S. wins that case, I'm not sure, Steve. I think we're going to have to live with what we're doing, and what we're going to see on ramifications on labeling could even get tighter, could even make it more difficult for producers to feed Canadian pigs. What we think is going to happen is we're going to get ruled, the United States is going to lose that case, that they are out of compliance. I just talked to Steve a moment ago, too, and back in 2007, we were importing about 10 million pigs from Canada coming into the Midwest to be fed. Today, that number is about 5 million pigs. So it's fairly evident that the Canadians have clear evidence that WTO has been restrictive to the pork trade. And again, I'm not real familiar with the numbers on the beef side, but it does include the beef and pork trade. And we know where we're at in the pork side, and we'd really like to see a fix to M-Cool. So we're anxiously awaiting that ruling. We think the parties in play will probably hear something later this month as to what the WTO is going to say. I think publicly we'll probably hear the ruling sometime in July. That would be our best guess at this point in time. So with that, I would entertain any questions that you may have.
What's the difference between what is being reviewed now versus what was reviewed prior? What the changes did they make?
I believe before, and Audrey, you can help me with this one, was on the different classes of labels and then the amount of data. But I know this one here where they include both the country raised and the country fed and the country slaughtered was added to it. Go ahead, Audrey.
Exactly. Good morning. Yes, this particular case that's under review reviews the May 23rd, 2013 rule, which was more restrictive than the 2009 rule. The 2009 rule allowed for commingling of pigs, this is particularly of concern for us with the Canadian pigs, with processors being able to run out a day run and be able to have a label B, that was completely taken away. So the law itself, and the reason why we think this needs to be fixed by Congress, not by USDA, is because the original law says born, raised, and slaughtered. As somebody who does the family grocery shopping, I'm not really keen. I mean, I know it was slaughtered. I don't need to see that Sunday morning when I'm in the meat case. I mean, I get it. Live pig, dead pig. But anyway, so it's the difference is the 2009 law, which allows for flexibility for producers and other marketing outlets, and the 2013 rule, which makes it more restrictive.
This is the second time it's been reviewed. How many times do we get before...
There is a chance that the United States could appeal again one more time, I believe is correct, Audrey. This would be the third time that they would appeal. The same token, if we lose and we're ruled out of compliance, the Canadians and Mexicans also can appeal a third time. Am I correct on that?
I'm sorry, say that again.
If we lose, it's over.
If the U.S. loses this case, they can apply. The Secretary of Agriculture can appeal. Mm-hmm. If the Canadians and the Mexicans lose, this is an appeal. So if we lose in the United States and we choose not to appeal, it's the law of the land. And then the Canadians and the Mexicans are within their rights to retaliate. Thus begins a separate set of clocks, and we can get into that offline, but there's a timeline for them to do that. But, I just want to reemphasize the issue here. This is not a meat issue anymore. It's not a meat issue. This is an international trade issue. And as an industry that trades globally, and we're out busy negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership, 12 countries around the world, we need to live up to our own obligations under the WTO. We can't be poking our best trading partners, Canada and Mexico, in the eye and not living up to our own trade obligations. This is why this is a broader trade issue. We're a member of a coalition in the manufacturer, the National Association of Manufacturers and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They are now very engaged in this issue because it will hit other industries. It will hit furniture. It will hit other agricultural products. It will hit wine from California. It is a much broader issue, and it will cost American jobs. So in the beginning, this was a meat issue. This is a much bigger issue. It's a trade issue.
Yeah, and I'd just like to reemphasize, USDA had the opportunity to fix this when they were negotiating the Farm Bill. It did not happen. We lobbied and worked hard to get that as part of the Farm Bill, a fix to AMCOOL. So now our next approach will be, if this financial or an economic pressure comes from retaliation by the Canadians and Mexicans, it's going to take legislative action to get this straightened out. And so that'll be our next focus if it happens.
What type of time frames are we actually looking at for Canada and Mexico to have the authority, the ability to impose the voluntary tariff?
Audrey, I'll let you to handle that. I think the earliest date I heard was later this fall, as early as possibly September.
They won't be able to implement, but they will be able to come out and engage in the process of selecting the products that they want to have on the retaliation list. And there's a whole process the WTO has and the plaintiffs have to go through. The WTO has to approve that, and then there's a certain phase in where they get it. And the earliest I think that tariffs can be imposed, I want to say, is early 2016, I think, something like. I think that's it. What is it? 15? Excuse me, 15. I misspoke. Yeah. So, no. Well, they can't implement tariffs in 2014. They have to go through the process. But so it's 2015.